Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the latest and greatest episode of the official Dom J Radio Show. What's good, world? How are y'all doing, man? I hope you're having a good start to your new year, man. We're sitting here about a weekend or so. The world's already acting like it's still 2020. At the time of this recording, we've just had one of the craziest electoral college certification days in history. So, you know, I'm going to be talking about that. We have some other guest features stopping by to discuss their takeaways and opinion. We get into the latest as we head into the NFL playoffs, the college football national championship game, all that and much more after this brief message. This episode's spoken word selection is brought to you by the official Dom J WordPress page, The Invisible Eye. It's entitled The Succinct Pursuit, up next on official Dom J Radio. The Succinct Pursuit. Pursue the truth at its finest. Pursue it for what you know to be true, what defines how you feel. Pursue not its relativity in regards to others, but pursue what your heart tells you. In this sense, the world, everyone strives to be so different without realizing contradictory actions just make you the same. Instead, pursue the ideal of knowing oneself because that is the way to be truly unique. After all, there's only one you. Pursue your own thoughts. Let not these words be the motivation to discover what should be uncovered. Let the want and the desire to better know the real you forge a passion unmatched by anything else. The pursuit will not always be met with open arms. Opposition is a must for change to occur. Without struggle, there is nothing to challenge or push someone to become better. Mediocrity is a disease that cripples the mind. And the mind is a tool, a catalyst that makes impossible possible. Pursue nothing but the passions of the heart. The chase for the light will lead you out of the dark. The Succinct Pursuit. And so on this episode of the official Dom J Radio Show, I have another special guest, a friend of the show who's been on before. So if you've listened before, she's a familiar voice, one of the coolest people I know. And if I ever have kids, or whenever I do decide to have kids, this will be their child psychologist, most likely, Dr. Shakoria Wells. How are you doing today?
I am well, Dominique. How are you?
I'm well. I'm in good spirits. I can't complain. You know, we've turned the page on a tumultuous 2020, to say the least. So, you know, to be sitting here in 2021, I'm blessed. And so I won't complain. You know, I'll just take it a day at a time, because that's basically all we can do, right?
Yeah, taking it a day at a time and then processing our feelings each time as well.
True indeed. Like I was saying, you know, we've been having a bit of discourse already because it's been a very interesting start. 2021 started off with a bang, so to speak. We ain't even a week in, and it's getting pretty lit. as a DC resident, you know, January 6th, for those that don't know or may be listening internationally, was a very interesting day. When we had a whole bunch of people just kind of ascend upon Capitol buildings in D.C., man. What was that like from your perspective as a D.C. native there?
So before, and it's quite interesting because before all of this was publicized, one thing that happened was that about a week ago, some hotels, in a specific hotel in downtown D.C. decided to close down because they didn't want any part of the ruckus or the rambunctiousness of the Trump supporters. And so one of the things that the news had been saying over the past week, you know, like, don't approach them, don't try to basically instigate them to do anything. And so we were like, but we live here.
Right.
So the thing was supposed to prepare for this, but yet and still, we had a breach of the United States Capitol, domestic treason, as it should be called.
Yeah.
And we're here, but the city was, we got placed on a curfew at 6 p.m. The mayor came on and we got a blast through our cell phones, through the TVs, that we would have to have a curfew at 6 p.m. Now, this was for the residents, but the people in the area were supposed to abide by this as well, but this was not true. So I saw differential treatment between how the Trump rally started and the Black Lives Matter protests, and I'm calling the Trump rally a rally and a peaceful protest against Black Lives Matter. So it really showed differential treatment. So the Black Lives Matter was protesting. They had the National Guard guarding the Capitol. However, when the Trump supporters came or the Trump ralliers came, the National Guard, no one came in. We just had local police. So that really, it made me go, what was the backing? But I'm sure people are familiar with how D.C. is run. D.C. is not a state, so we don't have the backing of Congress to kind of help support those roles. So the mayor reports directly to the president. And they should explain everything you need to know. So,
oh, yeah. No, I think, and that's what I was going to ask. I was like, it seems if you're an onlooker or even, you know, somebody that doesn't live in this country, for that to be the Capitol building, it seemed pretty easy to just march up in that joint, kind of just do whatever you wanted yesterday if you was in the know.
Well, I don't know if you, well, yesterday, me and my roommate were watching this as it was happening. But there's a specific clip that shows a D.C. police officer moved the guard railing for the protesters to breach the Capitol.
Yeah, I saw that.
And so when you think about that, like, who are you protecting and serving? Are you on our side of this fight? Are you on their side? And at the end of the day, like, we want justice. And I think that to see that was a slap in our face about justice, and also to think about from the perspective of, can we believe in this democracy? Is this democracy support us? And is this even a real democracy? And to think that we are perpetuating this behavior by entertaining all of the outlandish things that he said, and the election was rigged, or we need to recount the votes. And that was actually what was happening when the Capitol was breached, was that they were counting the votes. And so
the irony.
It's just the irony of it. But the audacity and the feeling that I want to discuss, and I'm grateful that you gave me this platform, is that we have to look at a system that does not support us. And we also have to look at a system that we also have to fight to be and to be a part of to change. So that's traumatic for people of color, especially Black people. And one of the things that I discussed with my roommate yesterday is that we're watching the power versus privilege fight. So we were taught that if we vote, we go to the polls, we hear our voices, that we actually matter. We're seeing that, like, Stacey Abrams Effrontly did her job in registering people to vote. But what's the flip hand side is that other people or white people show us how they can exhibit their privilege over our power. And I think that that is a conversation as a whole that needs to be discussed in Congress. It also needs to be discussed in classrooms and teaching them about their power of their voice. So I'm grateful that the world gets to see and gets to be put on display about how power versus privilege happens, because privilege often overtrumps power. We saw that yesterday, that not many arrests were made versus the Black Lives Matter for the Trump rally. And then when you also look at the way that they were handled, like, the protesters were rowdy, or let me correct myself, the rioters were rowdy. They were acting very barbaric, very rambunctious. They acted like savages, and they were treated with fairness, or they were treated delicately. And when we march peacefully and we protest, we're handled with aggression. And so just that dissonance between the two. And I think that people are missing the dissonance of perspective and reality, that two very similar rallies, but two different agendas, and they were handled very differently as well.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's the kid gloves, essentially, is what they were treated with. The video, I feel like, which should be a focal point of future conversations, in which you had the police officers of the Capitol just letting these people kind of walk up, walk through the barricades. They're opening the barricades for them. It's just a slap in the face to anything we've been taught about, you know, the fairness when it comes to peacefully assembling. Protecting and serving, but it's like you said, which side are you protecting and serving? So I think that is a conversation we've got to be looking forward to having. And it looks like the FBI, the Alphabet Boys, are awake now and looking for leads and tips. I think that damn video of the cops opening the gates should be a great starting point if you're asking for any sort of assistance.
That and also just how do we teach our children? And I had this conversation with my team this morning because we have a crisis hotline for parents to kind of call in and get support and for our children to get support. And I'm very grateful that my district thought enough about our families to do that, because where do we have the therapeutic space to kind of process, do I live in this America that is happening in the nation's capital, and that during a time of, you know, we're doing a pandemic, but also we've got to see on national television, no masks, there were no masks that people had on. So you come to DC and you endanger us by not wearing your mask. And then we've heard reports all week about them not wanting to wear their masks to enter restaurants and not serving them. And it's just they came here with an agenda to be barbaric. But what is the consequence when we decide to act like that? You know, we get a consequence, and I'm having a challenge with restoring the faith in our scholars that you live in a world that's democratic and that our voice is heard. But I think that we have to shift the perspective off of this happened, and the system is supposed to do this, but it is not doing this. But here's how we can make a difference. And I think that the attention now should shift to the work of Stacey Abrams, the work that Joe Biden has to do to restore our country. And I think that we should look at the narrative of what does need to happen versus what we already know. And I think that what's disheartening is that the world gets to see what Black people were telling everyone all the time about the unfairness and injustice in the South that we face every day, that we have to wake up and be zealous when people genuinely don't have a reason to not like us or to not associate themselves. And we went to high school together. Not all white people exhibit this behavior, but you have some that will exhibit this behavior. And then what do you do? How do you respond when they are just hostile and they don't have a reason to not like you? And so I'm trying to find the words to comfort my students, but I'm just telling them to keep pressing toward the goal of their calling. And that's hard. That's a challenge too.
No, I can imagine that being a difficult conversation and a difficult reckoning to really wrap one's head around of, you know, trying to peacefully and amicably be, you know, a upright citizen, if you will, and, you know, doing your civic duties, going about exercising your amendments in the manners in which they should be exercised. And then you see shit like you saw on TV yesterday, where it's a bunch of lawlessness, a clear exercising of privilege. Based on, you know, what you're saying, you've had clear evidence of people knowing this was going to be happening at least a week or so in advance around the city. I'm sure the tweets that obviously have been flagged and Twitter's all over Trump's ass this morning and today, but as far back as, you know, the earlier end of December, where he's saying they're going to see you in January, see you in D.C. on January 6th. So this has been a building of sorts of this momentum towards what happened yesterday. And I think for me, one of the biggest questions is to the officers involved in this. Like, are you not expecting us to see that you were openly complicit in allowing the Capitol building to be stormed and degraded in such a fashion? Or are you just assuming because we're going to be caught up in it being the pandemic, or it's not going to be that big of a deal, we're just going to let it fly? Because I really hope not, because if you do just let this continue to be the sort of behavior that's tolerated, it will continue to be perpetuated by future generations. And I think if you're trying to discourage that, we've got to have some sort of definitive mark where we say, nah, this is going to be the end of it. I hope that happens in 13 days, but I feel like I'm being a little optimistic in that sort of thinking. But one can only hope.
That is my question to myself and to my leaders, and for us just to derive a response is that we have watched for 4 years a man discern what decisions he wants to make based on his own agenda, not for the agenda of the people. And I watched the Congress people last night talk about, the senators talk about specifically what did they expect or what they felt as the Capitol was being breached, and some were frightened, some were scared. One particular senator that I watched, he said that, are we going to perpetuate the behavior of the beast? And I think that when we look or when we dissect that statement, who created this person to be the type of person that he is in power and to move this way, but the people. I think we need to hear a response from the people that voted for him. Is this the behavior that you guys want to invoke? Is this the behavior that you embody? And we have watched his characteristics throughout his whole presidency, and specifically during the election. He's just not, our character is who we are when people aren't looking or listening. And there's been conversations of him wanting to commit the very thing that he's telling that other people are doing, the voter fraud. You want us to find 11,000 votes in Georgia so that you can win?
Just find them out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. You are accusing the people. And one thing that has been floating around the internet is that you are questioning only one position or one role on the ballot, and that is of the presidency. We're not questioning the Senate, are we?
Nope.
Are we questioning the House? We're not questioning any other political office on the ballot except for the presidency. So that would allude that you're saying that we're just picking on you and we're not. Like, the people have spoken, and I think that he cannot accept that. But one thing that I do want to point out is that we're watching someone who has not been taught how to deal with conflict, and who has not been taught how to deal with failure. And I think that as we look at this, we need to mold our children in a way that they know how to resolve conflict healthily. And to also be able to accept defeat. Like, you will be defeated sometimes in your life, but that doesn't mean that you get to throw a tantrum or that you get your way. That this is not for you. Stacey Abrams, the gubernatorial election was taken from her, I would rightfully say.
Definitely
and
snatched.
She didn't let that snatch. And she did not let that stop her. She registered voters. She used her purpose to repurpose the voting, and to think that we had to go through voter suppression, and to know that all of the things that people of color have to continuously be zealous on and to overcome things, we are now looking at, okay, this is a result of our power. So going back to us shifting the narrative, we still have someone in office that's not accepting his defeat, but we won't accept defeat on our end. We're gonna keep making sure we educate people on voting, understanding the power of their voice when they vote, and then also getting more people of color in offices so that laws change that will really make an impact for us.
Absolutely. I think and to the greater at large, this podcast is a Stacey Abrams appreciation episode, if you will, with Warnock and Ossoff both winning their respective Senate seats, and that giving Democrats control of the House and the Senate. I think we can all sort to, again, hope and look optimistically to the future being easier for us all, getting legislative things passed. And I think you really hit the nail as far as two big things with the conflict resolution and dealing with defeat. I think this has been one of the purest examples of the American sense of failing up. You've had somebody who was a failed businessman in many respects before he entered into the political stratosphere. He then entered into said stratosphere with no experience whatsoever, and we just sort of let him run loose like a kid in a candy store for the past 4 years. And that's just dangerous. I feel like it set an entirely too dangerous precedent. That experience doesn't matter, that a certain decorum in the office does not matter, that you can do things as you will, despite the repercussions that may not affect you directly, but will infect entire bodies of other people. I think it's dangerous. And like you said, for us specifically, and when I say us, you know who I'm speaking to when I say us, I think it's a reminder that we have to continue to stay on our path, that we cannot be distracted nor deterred from exercising certain rights, making sure we're aware of what's happening in our communities, voting accordingly in our own interests, and continuing to move forward despite these sort of outlandish distractions and exercises of privilege that we get to often be reminded of on a daily basis. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's really disheartening, but I do want to make sure that parents are having conversations with their children about what they saw. And if you are a parent that doesn't let your children watch the news, that you do just instill the basic principles of just doing right and what's moral justice, but we do have to redefine what is right and what is moral in this country, because we do see differential treatment by the privilege of skin color, and that is alarming for me, and it should be alarming for all Americans. But the larger issue is that how do you teach your children something that you weren't taught? And that's something that I am having to help my bishop with us putting on seminars about parenting, and then helping them to know how to just help kids to self-regulate. We are going through a pandemic, so self-regulation and coping has been difficult for all, but how do you embody that to teach your children how to cope when things are overwhelming, when they don't understand or they don't know the importance of them logging onto a computer every day to do work? Like, the work still has to be done, and I think that we do need to focus. I haven't even heard a conversation. We haven't heard anything from Betsy DeVos about what virtual learning means and what the process is, and in the time that we need to hear a leader and we need to hear a voice, we're left to our own decisions and our own best strategies and best practices. And that's disheartening, because we're trying to navigate through something and we're supposed to be able to turn to a leader to give us advice, and we have not been able to do that. So I'm looking forward to getting the new Secretary of Education for Children, because I think that that has been undermined and underlooked, and I'm underwhelmed by Betsy DeVos' performance as the Secretary of Education in her tenure.
Yeah. Underwhelmed is a very polite way of describing what her tenure has been, so I'm gonna just leave it at that. I'm gonna stay nice with it as well. Definitely be happy to see a new regime coming in with the future. And again, just to the youth, always just be paying attention. Sometimes you are often robbed of your childhood, and you know, just being able to remain in that stratosphere of being a child. I feel like, you know, growing up as a 90s kid, we had a certain amount of that due to, you know, the lack of technological advances and things like that. But there's just so much access to information and all of these things sort of happening, you know, in front of cameras and on screens now, where if you're a parent, I can understand that this can be a trying conversation to have with children, but that ultimately, in my estimation, makes it that much more important to have, to see what they saw, how they're thinking about it, and to correct any potential misconceptions about it. Even if it's awkward for you to discuss between, you know, yourself and your spouse or whatever the situation may be, still important conversations to have, because sometimes the hardest ones are still the most important ones to have.
That is true. And then asking, one thing that I want to say about parenting is that, this is a little plug for me, I'm going to be writing a parenting book about parenting styles and what does it mean to be a good parent. And then I think that one of the things that we don't do, and I know that I was raised by my grandparents, and I was able to talk to them about anything that went on, but having a safe space for your children without judgment, and to kind of help them navigate their feelings and their lives as they grow up during this time. We grew up in a generation of do as I say and not as I do, but I think the generation of children that are being raised, that are coming, we're going to have to model for them the expected behavior. We're going to have to show them what it means to be a model citizen, to be a person that votes, to just show them what it means to reshape this country. But we're going to have to also allow them to tell us, or have that space to say, you know, well, how do you know that I'm a good parent, or what do I do to make you feel loved, or how do you know, how to budget your finances, or things like that. I think that those conversations that we as in our generation, we were left out of, we cannot leave this generation of children out of, because they're going to have to make decisions quicker than what we are going to have to, and they're going to have to be more impactful when they turn 18 to be voting. And I know that when I was growing up, my grandmother taught me that, you know, you should vote because your ancestors paved the way for you to vote. But that's all I knew. I didn't know about the psychoeducation about voting. And I think much of the country people to the Obamas came and showed us how we can be very impactful both at each legislative branch when we have the right parties in place. So I think that as, you know, you are learning to be a parent and you're learning to be an adult yourself, that you allow a transparency process to happen as you are teaching your kids that you're growing up to be an adult, but you're modeling to them what a model citizen and a model adult should be like.
No, well, that is definitely a piece of work that I'll be looking forward to reading, man. That's exciting. And I think for anybody that's still looking to continue their growth process on this life journey, one should never look to stop learning. And so just becoming a parent, while it is obviously a huge responsibility and you have a certain right of deference, you still want to think of evolving and growing in your parenting style. So I think that is definitely applicable for our generation of people having kids, and obviously for future generations as well. Dr. Wells, I want to thank you for your time today and stopping by the show. We'll definitely look again to have you on the show, but thank you for your time and this beautiful, beautiful discourse we've had today.
Anytime, and I want to thank you for this platform and for keep doing the work that you do with your podcast, because it gives the millennial perspective of how we see things. And it's very authentic and transparent, so I thank you for that, and keep doing this. I enjoy it.
Well, appreciate it. Appreciate the love. And we will be right back after this brief message.
Are you a school district or a parent looking for ways to improve the educational outcome of children? Consider Wells Consulting Service, LLC. Wells Consulting Service, LLC helps families and school districts provide quality service to all parties in the educational careers of students. Our vision starts with the firm belief that all students, regardless of their background, deserves access to high-quality education. We aim to assist our clients in producing the best educational outcomes for children, which involves a collaborative effort to shape both the children and the educational environment. As much, our team of educational advisors works closely with teachers and other stakeholders to improve the learning outcomes by assisting the learning community in the development of critical academic skills needed for success. In this effort, we hope to shape a culturally rich learning environment that will empower children to learn and overcome their challenges. Visit our website at wellsconsultingservices.com.
The thought of the day on this episode is this: it's okay to lose. Sometimes you lose on your own volition. Sometimes you lose at the hands of others. Either way, an L is an L. Whether you take it eloquently or ignorantly, the outcome, as has been with this presidential election, is inevitably the same. There's a certain thing as poise and grace in taking L's that sometimes only people who are used to winning and know how to deal with losing can understand. But I would implore anyone hearing this understanding that an L can be temporary, or you can carry that to your grave. Choose wisely.
What's good, official Dom J Radio listeners? It's your boy, Agent Jerry, stopping by to let you know Dom love the podcast, man.
In the world wide web of sports, yo, we had a wild, no pun intended, a wild NFL Super Wild Card weekend. Some pretty interesting games. We had Buffalo beating Indianapolis by a field goal, Josh Allen, and the Bills made it through that game unscathed. They were coming in banged up as far as the wide receiver core with Cole Beasley and Stephon Diggs, both dealing with injuries, but they managed to get that home victory. And I think it's been like, what, 20, 25 years or something like that since the Bills made the playoffs. So that was a huge, huge win. Happy for that organization there. We had the Rams pulling the upset over the Seahawks
with a combination of a backup quarterback and then their starter, who was injured with a thumb injury, Jared Goff, who ended up having to play the majority of the game. The Rams found a way to beat Russell Wilson. That number one defense, man, with Jalen Ramsey kind of just locking up DK Metcalf, really caused Russ some problems. They lost 30-20 in that one, so they'll be moving on to face Green Bay. Buffalo will be facing, who is it? No, they don't get the Browns. They get the Ravens. So that should be a really, really good game. Lamar Jackson. Speaking of Lamar Jackson, his Baltimore Ravens beat the Tennessee Titans 20-13, shaking that proverbial hump off his back, having suffered defeats by this team earlier in the season in overtime and last season in the playoffs. So I'm happy for him. All the Lamar Jackson haters out there had to bite it on this one. So I think that game with Buffalo should be an interesting game. In between there, we had Tampa Bay beating the Washington football team. Tom Brady handling business there. The Washington football team's defense is good, but they were depending on a QB who hadn't even been playing QB that much, and Heinicke. And he was pretty good, man. You know, for somebody who was basically coming off the street, he was pretty good. Put up 23 points. You know, Tampa Bay's defense leaves a bit to be desired, so it'll be interesting to see how they handle the Saints. Should they, should they get past the Saints next weekend? That would be the first time this season, because the Saints are 2-0 against them right now. Sweeping Tom Brady a third time is a bit of a task, but that Saints defense seems like they should be up to it. Speaking of the Saints, they beat the Chicago Bears 21-9 in their matchup. Drew Brees, Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas back together for really what seems like the first time in quite a long time. And basically, you know, it was a defensive struggle for a good bit of the game. But when your quarterback options are Drew Brees and Mitchell Trubisky, let's be honest, man, you can kind of garner who may end up being the one to pull through in that one. So next weekend, you'll have Tampa Bay and New Orleans matching up for the third time this season. Should be some good games. You'll have the Rams and Green Bay kicking it off next Saturday at 4:35 Eastern time. I think I'm taking Green Bay in that one. Aaron Rodgers has been on a tear, man. He seems really, really comfortable in year two of this new system he's been in. And Green Bay, I think that week off, they may start out a little rusty having that bye week, but I believe they'll get it rolling. Should be interesting, man. That Davante Adams, Jalen Ramsey matchup is going to be some peak prime time all pro on all pro football there. That game, it kicks it off next weekend. It'll be followed by Baltimore at Buffalo, 8:15 Eastern next Saturday. I believe the Bills will have the slight edge only because looking at the two quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson has had a great season, but Josh Allen has had arguably a top five season in his third year starting, man. He's really got command of that team. So I think I might give Buffalo the slight edge, especially at home. But I do like how the Ravens are playing. They're playing as one team around their QB, and he's got his first playoff win. So should be some good momentum for them going into that game as well. Then you'll have what was the craziest game of this weekend, I believe. The Cleveland Browns at Kansas City. The Browns beat the Steelers after scoring 28 unanswered points in the first quarter, which is a playoff record. End up winning that game 48-37. Utter collapse for the Steelers, if we're being completely honest. Just an utter collapse. So, you know, it was good for the Browns organization. They get their first playoff win since 1994, man. So they have been literally starving for some success, and now they're getting it. You hate that Odell Beckham Jr. is sidelined for all of this, but this run-heavy team where Baker just gets the ball out to wherever it needs to be, nobody specifically. They lean on Chubb and Kareem Hunt, who end up making the big gashing plays in the run game with a short passing game. And basically, that was all she wrote, man. Big Ben was terrible. Plenty of turnovers. I think the Steelers as a team had four in the first half. So when you're down four scores and you've given the ball up at least three or more times and your opponent hasn't given it up, you're probably going to be losing that game, man. So be interesting to see if he dips his toes in retirement or starts to go on a tour of other teams like Phillip Rivers is doing right now. Should be interesting to see that one. But you'll have either way, Cleveland, Kansas City kicking off at 3:05. I think it's been a great year for the Browns. Now, their running attack does match up well with the weakness of the Kansas City Chiefs defense, but Patrick Mahomes is a bad man, you know, not stealing that that swagger, if you will, from Aaron Rodgers, but he's a bad man in his own right. So we'll be tough. We'll be tough to see if Cleveland can hang around for four quarters with the Chiefs, but that should be, I hope it's a good game, really do. And then wrapping it up next weekend, like I said, Tampa Bay, New Orleans. New Orleans trying to beat Tom Brady for a third time. They've beaten the brakes off of these cats the first two meetings of the year, so you can have your excuses for why those outcomes were what they were. The start of the year, Tom Brady on a new team, okay, but the second matchup, now they have AB, which he was asking for. Brady wanted AB when you already had two Pro Bowl receivers in Godwin and Evans and Gronk and a host of people at the tight end. People made the excuse that was an AB-centric game. I don't want to hear that. Tom Brady can always decide where he wants to go with the ball. He doesn't have to force feed anybody at any given point in time because the best quarterbacks don't do that. That's why they're the best. They just take the open play. So no excuses, even playing field, if you will. I think the Saints should be slightly favored, and I'm taking them to win that game. That way the Brady, you know, having the Super Bowl in his backyard talk can come to an end. So Saints, this is your opportunity to go ahead and do that. Now, we turn our tables to the college championship that's kicking off. Ohio State versus Alabama. Alabama is an 8.5 point, favor. Currently, this is the last night, the last few hours of LSU being champions on top of the world, baby. It's our last night, so, you know, just sending out a quick go Tigers right there. I hope Ohio State pulls the upset off, to be honest. Justin Fields last weekend versus Clemson was amazing, battling through an obvious sort of rib injury. He took a big shot in that game, but really seemed to elevate his level of play after the injury, man. So I was pleasantly surprised. I believe that also helped his stock as far as the upcoming draft in April. So it should be interesting to see how he comes back. Obviously, you know, the defensive front for Bama is pretty stout. They make it tough to bob and weave between those big trees. They clog up the middle of the field right there. So should be interesting to see how Ohio State comes out and plays. I do hope they play well. I don't like anything coming easy or, you know, rooting for the University of Alabama, obviously. So Ohio State, by all means, Ryan Day and company, Justin Fields and company, y'all want to go ahead and pull that upset off, man, by all means, please, please do so. You have some Go Tiger fans rooting for you. Clemson, on the other hand, Trevor Lawrence apparently headed to Jacksonville, that number one pick in most cases. They don't play well in New Orleans, man. I think my LSU Tigers might have broke them boys. They do not play well when it comes to the Sugar Bowl and playing in New Orleans. Meanwhile, Ohio State, been there a number of times, and they typically do pretty well, man. So in all honesty, am I that surprised? Not really by the outcome, but, you know, because of COVID, again, they had some personnel out, some coaches out, some coordinators out, and Clemson, you know, all together, you know, made it respectable in the end of the game, but struggled offensively for a good bit of that game. So should be a good little national championship game to bring this season to a finale. Who y'all got in that game, man? Let me know. Should be a good night of sports. In entertainment news, just recently finished the Bridgerton series on Netflix, a show produced by Shonda Rhimes. Always happy to see one of us getting, you know, those exclusive deals. This was a big deal when she, inked it with Netflix for some exclusive content. So this being really the first we're getting to see from that. I thought it was a nice little show, man. Oddly enough, I think one of the things, you know, if it's going to be a Shonda Rhimes project, there's going to be an interracial love interest for sure. And if you haven't seen the show, if you just seen the promos for it, you can obviously see that that's what's happening there. I'm happy for her production company, Shondaland, flourishing on Netflix. A nice little interesting show, again, taking that old school feel, that vintage, nostalgic Victorian feel, and applying it in some 21st century ways, if you will. I thought it was a nice little show on Netflix. Something else I'm looking forward to coming up pretty soon, though, is Zendaya and David Washington's film called Malcolm and Marie, which will be out February 5th. I think that will be something to watch. So I think the content, I know 2020 was a slow year, so to already see 2021 starting off, these projects, the ones I mentioned on the last podcast episode, I think we're in for some pleasant surprises on some of our favorite streaming services. Because again, the coronavirus ain't going nowhere. New strains popping up in America and abroad. So the chances of, you know, the vaccine just helping things return to normal immediately, obviously not too keen on that happening. You had a certain number that you wanted to reach as far as vaccinations by the end of 2020. We got basically about 10% of that here in 2021. So we got a long ways to go. New strains, like I said, of the virus popping up, but also, you know, new vaccine types, Oxford, AstraZeneca, they're having their own. That's a third. I believe there's a U.S. exclusive also coming. But in the midst of that, you have the U.K. back on lockdown after having 58,000 cases in one particular day. So again, man, the world, if you're listening out there, man, stay safe. Wear your mask, wash your hands, social distance whenever feasible. And just be cool, man. Be cool, baby. In other news, you might have woken up one of these days, checked your bank account, and felt a little bit of stimulation, if you will. We had some $600 payments going out to people, which is nice, man. You know what I'm saying? There were also some snafus if you use services like TurboTax and things of that nature, but those are getting sorted out, which is unfortunate for people who were looking at it within a specific time frame. But I suppose, you know, getting it at some point rather than never is an upgrade. But it's not enough, man. It's really not enough when you have to choose between paying rent or putting food on the table. As Joe Biden, our president-elect, so eloquently put it, we need $2,000 stimulus checks. And I could not agree more. I really don't understand what we were supposed to do with that. Because again, I broke down the averages for y'all, man. It's like $1.43 or something per person with that amount of money. Again, don't know what the hell anybody's supposed to do with that if you're trying to hold it. Can't pay rent with $600 unless you're living in a studio apartment, and possibly 5 years ago because inflation and whatnot. So hopefully within the 100 first days of this new administration, January 20th, y'all mark that day in your calendar and then plan out the next 100 for your stimulus checks needing to be included in there somewhere. With a united House, Congress, go ahead and get that done. You can file your little insurrection paperworks for Trump trying to get him out of here by using the 25th Amendment or by, you know, impeaching him yet again, which would mean he couldn't run in 2024 for any sort of public offices, which would be cool. But alas, we gotta remind people that these $2,000 checks were prevalent and we need to be on top of those ASAP. Show me the money. And there you have it, everybody. The 23rd episode of the official Dom J Radio Show. Special shout out. Thank you again to Dr. Wells for stopping by. Thank you for this discourse as we kick off the new year. And thank you for everybody that's listening, man. Please be sure to like, subscribe, share all that stuff they tell y'all to do on these podcasts and these social media sites, all of that hotness. But in the meantime, in between time, be sure to stay blessed, get plenty of rest, and mind your business. Drink your water and stay woke, people. We're gonna get through this. Peace.